Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, time for a very special announcement. I'm very excited to introduce you all to Howl.fm. This is the best and most convenient way to listen to all episodes of Happy, Sad, Confused. It's on the web at howl.fm and on the go with the brand new Howl app. You can stream and download all Happy, Sad, Confused episodes that have been released in the past 6 months with this, guys. And you can go beyond just the shows with behind-the-scenes photos, commentaries, and much more. Plus, if you want to upgrade to Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month, you'll get exclusive access to the entire Happy, Sad, Confused archive, every single episode going all the way back, and to all the Earwolf and Wolf Pop archives. This includes all episodes older than six months. All have been remastered, no ads on any of them. Plus, only with Howl Premium, you can listen to hundreds of hours of WTF with Marc Maron, the gold standard, guys, right? You can hear all the classic interviews with Robin Williams, Louis C.K., and so much more. Howl has also partnered with some of your favorite hosts and comedians to develop Howl Originals, brand new shows available only with Howl Premium. You really need to check it out. Check out great new series from Lauren Lapkus and the AV Club right now. Already, there are 10 brand new hilarious Howl Originals, and they are adding new shows every week. So get access to all this exclusive content, both on your phone and on your desktop, with Howl Premium for only $4.99 a month. And with the promo code HAPPY, you get a full month of a free trial. So go to howl.fm, enter the code HAPPY at checkout, and you're off and running. Remember, you can use Howl on your phone or your computer, but you can only use my promo code on the howl.fm website. Go to howl.fm, that's howl.fm, and use the promo code HAPPY for 1 month free trial of premium. Welcome to another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. I'm Josh Horowitz. This is my podcast. This is where I talk to really cool, smart, interesting, talented people, and you enjoy it, hopefully. That's the idea, at least. This week, we're talking to Mr. Ben Schwartz, star of Parks and Recreation and the new film, the new Robert Zemeckis film, The Walk. Joining me for this introduction is an old returning favorite. You know him, you love him, Joel Hanek.
Hello.
Hi, Joel.
Hello, Josh.
How's it going?
Good. Thank you for having me back.
I feel like we should introduce someone else that's in the office right now. We've never had her on the podcast. No. She's been an integral part of many an after-hours sketch over the years.
She's been in a few after-hours sketches over the
years.
I've
been in seven.
That's the voice of Ms. Sammy Heller.
Are you not supposed to do that for yourself?
That's kind of lame. But I thought...
Applauded.
Yeah, no, well, it was good. Yeah.
For the record, I did not. No, I'm a big fan.
Well, you're not like a nice person.
I'm not. No, Sammy really did... I think your most notable performance in an After Hours sketch, would you agree, is the famous Tom Hiddleston Loki'd. A fan favorite.
Yeah, that was some of my best work. I'd say that I tie that with the Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke, which you both appeared in.
Yeah, we were dueling lovers.
getting a lot of love for the Ethan Hawke After Hours on the podcast.
It always comes up. That's another undiscovered gem, I feel like.
But one day.
But you played in Loki, you played... Who did you play?
The...
Lunch lady number one.
Lunch attendant, the cashier.
Yeah.
Who, you know, you go to pay for your lunch, and I'm like, no, it's already paid for, you idiot. And then Tom Hiddleston's like, Loki.
Yeah, it's good.
It's like the audience so roars with laughter. Yeah.
You don't need to watch it now. Yeah. You got it, basically.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
I also thought Sammy should be here today because she kind of brought together me and the guest on this week's podcast. Mm-hmm. You're an acquaintance, a friend of Mr. Ben Schwartz.
Yes.
The very talented comedian, improv genius. He's pretty fucking insane at improv.
Yeah, he's not bad at it.
I've seen him do it in person.
I don't like to give out compliments for free, but he's not bad at it.
Me too. I begrudgingly acknowledge his superiority to most of the known world in this regard.
We all went to a show, and I feel like we all laughed at least once.
There was one. There was one like, ha!
Yeah, like a...
Yeah, it was like a good Alf laugh. Just a single...
Classic Alf. But Ben, yes, in addition to being an amazing improv guy, obviously he's had two TV series the last few years. House of Lies, I should mention, too.
Yeah.
Still going strong, I think, in its fifth season next season on Showtime. Mm-hmm. And very cool for him, psyched for him that he's in a Robert Zemeckis movie, which we bonded about quite a bit because we both, probably all of us in this room, love Robert Zemeckis films. Yeah. And this is the new one that tells the famous story of Philippe Petit.
Oh, you did that so nicely.
It's not Philip Pettit, right?
No, I believe it's Philippe Petit.
Wow, that's hardcore French.
I'm good.
Who, of course, high wire artists who, not to spoil anything, it's in the trailers and everything, but like way back when World Trade Center, the Twin Towers, walked across.
What?
Sorry.
What?
Sorry. Anyway, that's the new film. Let's see. When does that open? When should we promote that? It's coming soon.
September 30th.
Is that true? You're so good, Sammy. Yeah, you're right. No, you're right. It's the 30th. It's actually, as we tape this, it's about to open the New York Film Festival. That kicks off this weekend. So check that out when it's in theaters. Also check out some cool new things on the web that we've produced. A really fun shoot we had a few weeks back that I know I get a lot of tweets from you guys about this. It's the Mockingjay shoot I did with Jennifer Lawrence and Josh Hutcherson and Liam Hemsworth. It's good. It's worth the wait, guys. What do you have, Joel?
Could you rank them?
Rank them.
Least a favorite.
No, I never would. They're all equally perfect.
No, Liam's not number one. That's
that's crazy.
Yeah, but I'm being honest.
No.
Twitter handle at Joel Hanick. Go for it.
War declared on the Hemsworth boys. No, they were all delightful. And this was a special shoot that we did out in LA a few weeks back. Goes out as of, it should be out October 1st. Look out for that. You will see Jennifer Lawrence do something that no human being has ever seen her do. So prepare. what, Sammy?
Because I'm where like, is your mind what wandering? What could it be?
You don't know, do you?
No.
It's pretty awesome.
I just want to say I'm a huge Liam.
Okay.
For the record. No, it's too late. It's too late.
Also coming up in After Hours Universe, should mention, just this morning we taped a really fun sketch with the one and only Mr. Hugh Jackman, one of our favorites over the years. Everybody's favorite. Nobody has a bad word to say about Hugh because
he's
a perfect human being.
Like in every way.
We should say Sammy is full on like the biggest Hugh Jackman fan on the planet.
Like he's physical,
okay.
Emotional, okay. Spiritual, like just perfection.
Give us your best. You do a pretty good Hugh. Well, give us your best Hugh.
This is Hugh Jackman promoting Pan. We've got full-scale pirate ships. We built a full Neverland. You're going to love it. You're going to love it.
What does your wife think about it? What is your...
Deb? Oh, Deb said this was the best one yet. She said this is the biggest pirate movie that's ever been made. No disrespect to John Depp. No disrespect.
That's a preview of Sammy's one woman Hugh Jackman.
<Gotta go. laughs>
And the backstory that Deb is an expert on pirate films too.
She is, Joel.
No, that's the detail that makes it so rich.
Yeah,
we've
she's an expert in everything.
We've shot a lot of things with Hugh over the years, and this one is no less brilliant. He just he walks in a room and he owns it. He can do everything. And he's really funny in this. So that's coming soon. A lot of fun sketches on the way. And what else to say about Mr. Ben Schwartz? What do you need to know? All you need to know is this is a funny dude. We talked for about 45 minutes and laughs aplenty.
Talked for so long.
I think we're kindred spirits.
Yeah. Everyone was like, are they okay? in there, and then I was like, did Josh kill Ben? And
first thought.
I was like, oh my God, I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah, I murdered your friends. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, he's alive and well, and I believe, hopefully, you haven't listened to this podcast yet. You don't know what's to come.
No.
You might learn a lot about your friend and me.
I don't know if I want to listen to it.
Okay, so one person that shouldn't listen to it is Sammy, but Joel will listen.
I'll listen. He's a gentleman.
It's a tough act to follow.
I listen to gentlemen podcasts, and he is a gentleman. So.
This should be called the Gentleman's Podcast.
And one scoundrel.
It's tough to follow last week's. I know, Joel, you and I share the Michael Shannon love. I think an all-time favorite.
I don't have hatred for him.
But we're preoccupied to a degree.
Things with things you don't hate. Categories for Sammy.
That's great.
Things I don't hate.
Is that how you go up to actors you admire? Hey!
I don't hate you. That's exactly how.
Leave them wanting more.
Exactly. You can't, if you, I love you, I love you. It's like, you know it's fake.
Yeah.
If I give you an I love you, you know that's it's like real.
You're about to skin them alive and put their head
like
on you.
Like that I have a hair doll of you in my dresser.
Speaking of which, no, there's no segue. Let's just dive right in. Let's let the audience enjoy.
Come on, let's get to it.
And in the meantime, as always, guys, hit me up on Twitter, Joshua Horowitz. Let me know what you're loving, what you're hating, who you want to hear on the podcast, and who you prefer, Sammy or Joel.
Oh, yes, yeah. Please.
Please vote.
Yeah, please vote. Tweet at us. A huge Liam Hemsworth fan.
No, he's not. Joel hates The Hunger Games.
If we're being honest, I do hate Liam Hemsworth.
Have you ever seen The Hunger Games?
I've read all the books.
The movies count more than the book.
Do they have lizard people in this one?
Okay, let's go to the podcast.
No, that's a thing, right?
No, it's literally not a thing.
This week's podcast with Mr. Ben Schwartz. Enjoy.
No, for real, at the end of the last book, there's just like lizard people.
leave my office.
You can shut that out.
Get out. take a moment.
I don't need
it. We're getting real.
Are we really?
No, we're not.
Oh,
we're not.
You can get real if you want.
No, I was listening to some of your other podcasts, and I'm kind of intimidated.
Which one? Did you do a little bang bang?
I was listening. No, I was listening to Pete Holmes.
Oh, that's a very long time ago, and he wants again. Did you listen to a solo bolo or no?
No.
Oh, you're a fool.
what did I miss on that
Not
one?
Not because of me, just because Comedy Bang Bang, done like 20-something of them, but we do Just Me and Scott.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only time he does it with one other person.
Oh, wow.
And we just sing songs the whole time. the entire podcast is
what
him
duration
and I singing
of time is there?
An hour and change.
That's enjoyable for you and for the audience.
I can't tell you that. I don't think it is. And by the way, I'm going to be quite honest. I don't think it is. I looked at the very last page of this script, in the script, to see if it tells you what happens.
Oh, in Inception?
Yes.
And?
I got the script to see what it says, and I forgot.
That's
funny
a very anticlimactic story.
I just forgot.
I used to have like 12 of these little Inception totems that they sent for some reason, and I think just many guests have stolen them. So I'm watching. That's the last one. And
don't let anybody steal it.
And I'll know if it goes away. It's on you.
Well, I can't promise I'm not going to steal it.
It's good to have you here, Ben.
It's great to have you. Are we recording?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, wow. It's great to have you, man. It's great to have you on my show.
Wait, what?
My voice is a little bit lower, if you can hear. I don't know what it is. I think I have some sort of, I don't know what it is. I'm not sick, but my throat doesn't work right now.
Right. Well, okay.
That might be sick. That might be sick.
Actually, I'm not a doctor, but that could be.
Yeah, but I don't feel sick. I'm just like real tired and I cough and sneeze all day.
There's blood coming out of my eyes.
Yeah. Every hole is filled with like everything. But like I know I'm not sick. I'm 104, but I'm not sick. I know when I'm sick.
It's the power of the mind. You're conquering the disease.
I think that's what it is.
Do you get sick a lot?
I'm just talking about this. I do, right? But it's because I kind of overwork myself till I have nothing left. And then I learn not to do that anymore.
Right.
But the problem is I went like 6 or 7 months without getting sick, which is huge.
That's big.
Yeah. We were talking about outside. It's like, you know, when you go in those businesses and it's like 15 days until our last accident, 17 days.
I
like one of those.
Counting,
exactly.
Yeah.
It was very exciting.
Right.
Very exciting. And then maybe 3 weeks ago, I got sick. It was just my birthday. I got sick a little bit before my birthday.
Right.
And then it went away.
Right.
And then after my birthday, even though literally I went to Dave and Buster's, In-N-Out, and didn't drink. I had one beer and that was it. I just started, my throat felt scratchy, and hasn't been sick. It's just been this weird scratchy feeling.
Maybe you contracted something horrible in the D&B.
God, but how terrible would that be?
That'd be, I mean, that's a fine way to go. Better than Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, God, that is. Did you ever go to Chuck E. Cheese when you were a kid?
I didn't.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up on the tough streets of the Upper West Side.
Ooh, what streets exactly?
West 70th.
Ooh, and?
Central Park West in Columbus.
Oh, my God, you're beautiful, beautiful, wonderful, yeah, white boy.
It was pretty rough.
You wonderful Jewish man. You sweet, sweet man.
Stereotypical.
Did you go to the park a lot, or because it was right there? Who cares?
Yeah, of course. No, okay. I never got, I think my training wheels came off my bike at like 16. Like, I was like, this will surprise nobody.
Yes.
I'm not very coordinated.
Really? Can we have a toss?
No, what's not?
Can we have a toss?
The only thing on my desk is like a scissors. Oh, there's another inception totem.
So I'm going to take the microphone with me.
Okay, what's happening?
I'm going to go on one side of the room.
This is the most
active. So for everybody who can't see, I don't know if you've seen,
by the way.
Is this a new office or the same office?
It's a relatively new office.
New office. So if you can't see, there's Nazi paraphernalia everywhere.
Literally. I'm an enthusiast.
He's not right. You're not a supporter. You're just an enthusiast.
Just appreciate it, yeah.
Okay, I have an inception totem on one side.
What am I supposed to do?
You're going to catch it with your hands.
I've heard about this. Someone throws it
and you catch it. It's called having a catch.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's relatively easy. Although the object I'm throwing is kind of weird to catch.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's going to be a light toss. It's not going to be a hard thing. Okay.
I have to return it, or is the whole goal of this?
No, you just, to show your coordination, all I want you to do is catch it. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Are you nervous?
Very.
Do you want a slow motion video it as well?
No, I'm
okay, here we go.
For real.
Ready? Are you going to do it? Yeah. His lip is quivering, no joke. His bottom lip is quivering. I'm not even doing a bit. His bottom lip, he got nervous. You're a little nervous, right?
Very nervous.
Okay, I'm going to stand up. You won't hear me for a bit. Here we go.
Wait, am I standing too?
You can. Ready?
Sure.
On three.
Okay.
One, two, hey! He had to use his whole body every minute of it. He fucking used his whole body all day.
How would you describe the way I caught that, though?
I think, first of all, let's say what it is.
That's the first important thing. Yeah.
You caught it. It didn't hit the floor.
Yeah.
Your eyes went very, very wide. But can I tell you, you got the job done.
Thanks, buddy.
Do you know what I mean? So you are coordinated enough. How did that feel? Did you ever play sports when you were in the Upper West Side or no?
I was in the Little League.
What was your name? Were you the D'Agostino or something? D'Agostino something.
We were the Citibank Panthers.
Yeah, sure. I was the D'Agostino something. I did not like playing baseball, though.
No? Were you just not good, or you just didn't enjoy it?
I was. My dad keeps saying how good I was at it. I was always afraid of the ball.
Okay.
Always afraid of the ball. Yeah. Afraid of getting hit. But I loved animated shows, and I loved video games, and that's like the time when I would only, like, it was getting in the way of all the things I loved.
Prioritize.
So I remember the day my father, Michael Philip Schwartz, and Joan Foreman Schwartz, I remember the day that I was just so sad that I had to go to baseball practice that my mom was like, Mike, just let him just stay. And then my dad goes, do you really not want to go? I go, yeah, I really don't want to go. And he said, okay, you can stay. And it was like such a grown-up moment for me.
Wow.
And then I stopped. And then when I went to high school, I got huge into basketball, and that's all I did.
So you've got height. You've got that advantage.
I have a little bit of height. Yeah. And then also, I also learned when I moved from Riverdale, which is like the Jewish part of the Bronx, northern part of the Bronx, to Edgemont, which is in Scarsdale. It's like a very, very, very suburb. Everybody played basketball. So if I wanted to make friends, I would have to learn how to be pretty good. Like, okay at it.
So what was vying for little Ben Schwartz's time outside of the baseball diamond? It was video games?
Great
it
question.
Was
video games.
Fun, don't diminish
great
what
question.
I'm trying to do.
It is. Great question. let me answer that question with another question. How do you think of these things?
By the way, it was not on the card.
Are you serious? Yeah. By the way, there are no cards.
There are some cards here, just in case.
Oh, you don't need them, though. I feel like you're pretty good. Can I tell you what I'm really excited? I will answer this question.
Okay.
What was the question? How tall am I? 6 feet. So what was the question?
It was, what was distracting you from the baseball diamond?
Baseball, I got no joy out of it. And I was scared and all this. I love my friends and stuff, but I didn't enjoy it.
Right.
But I will say this, I stuck with it for like a couple of years. It wasn't like immediately, like I had to do it for a couple of years.
Right.
Same with soccer. I love like baseball. I love to get in that cup, and then having like hitting myself with a baseball bat.
Yeah, that's not right. That's not normal.
Right, of course. And then everybody sucks each other's dicks. Maybe my baseball experience was very different. Come on, everybody. So like, batter up. You take down your pants. Someone grabs your cup, fills it up with Vaseline.
Right. Yeah.
And then gives you a quick hand job.
Wow.
Ugh. Anyway, Riverdale was very weird. I'm very excited. I don't know if you bailed yet, because you could have.
What do you mean?
That I'm doing press for The Walk, and your name came up. Did you bail?
I haven't officially bailed. I don't think I bailed.
You're going
to
bail.
No, I'm not bailing.
All right,
I want to talk to you about The Walk.
Well, when you do press for like...
am I on the official list?
A big thing. Yeah, I circled it and sent it to you, remember?
Now it's all coming back, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, you see the poster behind me.
I know. You have no idea. It's all I care about. You know, I've asked him many questions about Back to the Future.
I mean, he is top five filmmakers.
Have you met him?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Interviewed him a couple times.
You've met everybody. You've interviewed him a couple times?
Well,
What was your question that you like really want to get answered?
Well, no, I mean, I've hounded him for years about Who Framed Roger Rabbit and the sequel.
Yes, I have talked to the producers about the sequel.
Because they're...
And I know what the storyline was.
What?
Which we will talk off the air.
No! No, I'm obsessed with him. I'm like, please, even like down to like the films that people don't love, like Death Becomes Her.
Great. No, you're picking the wrong film. That's like a cult classic, amazing film.
It's a brilliant film.
Yeah, that's an amazing, amazing movie. Week. You say Melissa Leo?
No, it's Bruce Willis in that. But yeah, Melissa.
Bruce Willis is in that.
Yeah, Bruce Willis.
Everybody's in that. Meryl Streep's in that.
Yep. Goldie Hawn.
Sure. We did something. So the cast of this movie was Joseph Gordon-Levitt, me,
Sir Ben
Kingsley. But he worked for a week. I got to meet him once, and it was so cool because I said, "Hey, I'm Ben," and he said his name is Ben as well, and he didn't say that his name was Sir Ben, and that it was a huge honor, because then I saw him say hello to everybody else and he's like, "Sir Ben," but he was so kind, but I didn't get to meet him. Like, he was there for 7 days and then I was there for a month,
right?
But we watched a Zemeckis movie every Sunday. We all got together in the hotel. We watched a Zemeckis movie every Sunday on a big screen in the conference room.
Was Robert the one that convened these? He was like, you should watch.
He didn't know anything about it. And we were too embarrassed to tell him. We were too embarrassed to tell him we were doing it to the very, very end. We were saying, just so you know, we just saw every single one of your movies. Like, we didn't get a chance to see Used Cars. But
oh, that's a good one too.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? These are seminal movies in my life. Back to the Future is my favorite movie of all time. There's nothing that compares to Back to the Future. I think it's a perfect film.
It's a perfect movie.
And by the way, if you write jokes and you write scripts and stuff, like I think you do as well. You write, no?
Sure, yeah.
It's a perfect joke setup. He sets up everything in the beginning.
Yes.
He plays it all out. It's like a perfect joke. Everything is set up so perfectly and then pays off so perfectly. You could study it as a comedian and be like, oh, this is amazing. And then Who Framed Roger Rabbit was a huge movie for my life.
Totally.
Forrest Gump came out at a time when we got movies in my house a lot. So we saw that. I know every line to Forrest Gump because it was on repeat at my place. And then I loved Castaway as well. But there's a series of them that those three in particular I was so drawn to. He's amazing. He makes old school movies that like feel like movies. This movie's so good. Do you see it?
I haven't seen it. They haven't screened it.
I can't wait. I hope you like it.
I'm sure I will. There's never been a Zemeckis movie. What if you're the one that finally breaks
the
streak?
It won't be this.
Of course it won't.
I saw it. It's great.
So does this feel like is this apples and oranges compared to a lot of the stuff you've done? Because it's, I mean, someone like Zemeckis, that stands out on a resume.
Yes.
It's a different...
I mean, as in terms of directors?
Yeah, just in terms of like the experience of it. Like, I can't imagine Forrest Gump was an improvised movie.
Supposedly it was 99% improvised. Supposedly.
Is that right?
The character choice was totally different. Did you hear that story about who originally got offered Forrest Gump?
No, I don't know.
I think it was Bill Murray. Am I wrong?
That probably sounds right.
I could be wrong. Someone hashtag that. Fact check that and then hashtag Josh Horowitz.
Have you met Bill Murray?
No, that's it. So I do a show at UCB like where I get... big actors or directors that have never done improv before, and I match them with old school guys that have been doing it forever. And my top two are Tom Hanks and Bill Murray. But
now you're 1 degree away from Tom.
Oh, I just almost got a movie that he was in also. I thought it was going to seal the whole thing. Like, I thought I got it, and then I didn't. That, by the way, that doesn't ever get old. It still is very painful every time you don't get a role. It's such a weird thing.
Well, you're just in a different, even no matter what echelon you're in and what kind of caliber of the role in the film, there's still disappointment. I was going to qualify it. I don't think there
Do
is
it.
An unless. No, I was going to say like, unless you're Chris Pratt now or something, but like in 5 years, he won't get everything he's
on. No, I'm sure he doesn't get the role that, Christian Bale get. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's so funny the second you realize that, because there are people like, when I was just doing comedy, the fact that I was even on TV is insane. It's insane. It's crazy that I get to do anything. And there's always someone above you, and then there's someone always massively above you, and there's someone below you, and there's always someone massively below you.
So wait, talk to me a little bit about, because I read about this bringing folks in that aren't necessarily thought of for improv into the group.
Sure.
So like you,
how long is this podcast?
It's like 40, 45 minutes.
I mean, we could probably make it 53 though, right?
Yeah, we can do 53.
Okay, because this is going to be a 12-minute story.
Perfect. Well, tell me some of the notables, because I read, like, what, Jane Fonda, J.J. Abrams, I mean, your previous
yes,
boss.
Yes, very close smartest, with that gentleman.
Smartest, funniest
hopefully,
man on the planet.
Hopefully, I'll do 1,000 things with him in my life. I think he's one of the most inspirational people in the world. I'll go visit Bad Robot, and he's, like, editing Star Wars and also developing 6 TV shows and 5 movies, and then he spends time with his family, and he's a good father, and then a good husband, and it's so exhausting for me to watch that I get this raspy voice. I get this weird, sick, raspy voice.
Well, not to mention also, like, when I started to interview him, and my brother is buddy
with JJ. Isn't that insane?
It's fun.
But everybody that inspires you, you get to, like, it's he crazy. Is truly someone that I think inspires me. I could be around him, listen to him, and become better at my job.
Yeah.
And you get to interview the best people at their jobs.
Those are the ones. Those are, it's
usually, I mean, not me. I apologize. I'm just like a schmuck.
This must be amazing.
I'm so sorry.
No, you are in the group. Right. No, but honestly, it's the filmmakers. It's the ones that you grew up with, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, when I think of people like Zemeckis. I think of sitting down with Francis Ford Coppola.
That's and insane.
It's like, it's mind-blowing to pick their brain. And to, like, get paid to, like, legitimately ask the questions you would ask anyway. Like, so what happened to Godfather 2? That's, you know, it's like, it's insane.
Right.
But my point with JJ was... I remember the first time I heard him speak or interviewed him. It also struck me he's like he could be a stand-up. Like I feel like he's the funniest guy on the planet.
He's so funny. He should do a comedy. I want him to direct a comedy so bad. He's so funny and quick. He came on and did improv.
Right.
But the best thing is you get these huge, huge people. Like Cheadle's done it 3 times, and so the list. Okay, so it's the main improvisers. It could be anybody, but usually they're Horatio Sanz, Thomas Middleditch, who's in Silicon Valley. This is before Silicon Valley.
Right.
Zach Woods, who's in Silicon Valley in The Office. Lauren Lapkus has been doing it a bunch lately. Gil Ozeri, these guys from Hot Sauce, Gil Ozeri and Adam Pally have done it a bunch. And then it's me. And then it's usually 2 people who've never done improv before.
Okay.
One is a comedy-based person like Scott Aukerman or Paul F. Tompkins. Sure. And then one is someone who's never done it. So the people who've never, ever done it is like Blake Griffin has done it 3 times. And by the way, maybe the best. He's unbelievably funny. He's so funny and very quick. I feel like if he wasn't 6'10", maybe
something. Like
that. I don't know. I'll tell you,
might as well be 9 feet up to me.
If he wasn't 9 feet, he would be in comedy 100%.
Yeah,
100%. And so okay, ready? Blake Griffin, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Don Cheadle, Helen Hunt, Jane Fonda, Adam McKay, J.J. Abrams, Corey Stahl, Jake Johnson, Glenn Howerton. It's a very, very long list. I think I've done whatever. And the past 5 have been all charity. So I pick a different,
nice.
I pick a different nonprofit mental health association in New York and they get all the money. So I've raised like $10,000 for different mental health in New York, which is great.
So what do you say to them before? Like, do you give them any tips?
It's only people I know.
Yeah.
Oh no. So what do I say before? Like if you were going to do it?
Yeah.
So if you were going to do it tonight, I would first of all say, do you want to come to a show beforehand? By the way, you do not have to.
Right.
You don't even have to see a show. You know what I mean? And then they'll be like, oh, I might be busy. Like, great. This is all you need to know. When someone runs in front of you, that means the scene is over.
Right.
If someone taps you on the shoulder, that means step to the side. Take as many risks as you want. Be as stupid as you want. Be as crazy as you want. Whatever you do, the 5 of us, our job is just to support you.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what you do. Even if you make a weird turn that doesn't make sense improv-wise, we will make the turn with you. So it looks like that's what was supposed to happen.
Right.
And then there has never been an experience where someone hasn't said, I want to do it again immediately. Immediately. Because afterwards, like, oh, I get it now. And now I want to, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's such a, like, when you get dramatic actors up there, it's very inspiring because all they do is they act in the moment. And they're the best ones. The dramatic, like, Corey Stoll was awesome. And then some people that are comedy-based feel such pressure that they try to be too funny and they push it too hard.
Right.
But you can't, I mean, you can't lose. It's so fun.
So what do you do? I mean, you've been doing this so long in terms of improv and you're literally at the top of that field. Like, what do you do if... Does your brain ever like freeze up? Like, do you ever like lapse into like a default? Like, okay, if nothing else pops into my brain, I will do this silly voice number 7.
No, but that's funny. No, what is your silly voice? Let's say you were about to be funny and you had to do a silly voice.
You know that guy, whatever. I mean, like, you know, that's default. Number 3.
I wonder if there's tropes I'll go back on. If there's like, because if I do a lot of 2-person shows,
sure.
I do a lot with Jess Middleditch and I do a lot with Adam Pally and Gil Ozeri, where like you have to initiate scenes a lot.
Sure.
I wonder if I'll set up a scene where we're in a car. You know what I mean? Like, if I can't think of something, maybe I'll put us in a car. I'll put us in a movie theater. But I'll never say the same thing.
Sure.
And there's never a thing you go back to, which is funny because, like, if I get more nervous if I have to memorize a huge monologue.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like, I was talking to someone who was on Game of Thrones, and they were, like, petrified of improv. Petrified of it. And freeze up. He said he freezes up when he can't do it. And it was amazing because he's a strong, amazing actor.
Right.
But like, it's just a different thing. They want, you know, some actors want words, and I'm more comfortable if I know the words, but I can play.
So when you're on a set, so at this point now, when you're on a set, like The Walk, where it's presumably not much room for improv, I would guess, is that at this point comfortable, or is it still?
It's more comfortable than it was before. Yeah. And also I'll try to sneak some stuff in every now and then.
Right.
But also like my role, I'm in like five or six scenes, so I don't have to go crazy. If I was Joe, had like every line in the movie. He's amazing. He's extraordinary in it.
He's
a movie star. I realized that when I remember watching him before when we were filming. I was like, oh, he learned how to walk on a wire. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's insane. His like body was perfectly fit for this exact job.
Yeah.
He memorized everything with a French accent, and he spoke French for half the movie. It was so inspiring. And then I'm like, I just show up with like silly facial hair. I'm like, let's do this.
You must be proud of your hair though. You've got really good hair.
My hair is pretty good. You have very good hair as well.
Thank you. It's like the one thing I'm not worried about losing.
Weird. If you go to LA ever, I used to buzz my head in New York. I used to just like, and then I never knew how to grow it out. And then I moved to LA and I didn't get a job acting for like a month and a half. So my hair grew out incredibly long.
Right.
And I auditioned for this movie. The first pilot I ever got was Mitch Hurwitz, who's a hero of mine. I can't imagine he's not a hero of yours.
Yeah, of course.
I wonder if we name our top five shows. I'll get back.
Okay, let's do that. Yeah, yeah.
I wonder how much they'll coincide, because I bet three out of the five will be the same.
In terms of what? You want to do sitcoms? You want to do...
No, just like comedies. Our five favorite comedies. But wait, I apologize for jumping all over the place. So...
First month in there.
Yes, I auditioned for Mitch Hurwitz, and Allison Jones, the casting director, who is truly the biggest and best comedy cast director in the world. She's cast everything.
Yeah.
So I knew about her. Like, I was nervous to meet her.
Right.
And then I came in late because I went to the wrong address, and they emailed me that I had to go to a different address. So I came in late, which was great because I didn't have time to be nervous.
Sure.
And then I auditioned. My hair was so stupid and crazy. And I go, I really apologize. I will cut my hair for you if I get this role. And he goes, no, you will not. You will keep that hair. So that's how it all started. And then I realized I become more of a character. My hair was never a thing. And only in LA, like, when you turn like a certain age, once you hit like 26, 27, I'm 34 now, but it's like all of a sudden like guys will come up and be like, dude, great. Like that's like, totally. It's such a funny, never in my life. Like it wasn't even a thing people talked about.
Oh no, it's something to be proud of, man.
Oh my God. In LA, it's such a, because I think there's so many medications and pills and regimens to make sure you maintain your hair, right. Which I understand, you know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of their confidence may come from that. So I get it, but it's like, never before have I gotten, and then like, it was a big thing.
Okay,
all right.
So let's do our top. Okay. We're going to do movies.
Do we want to write it? All right. We'll say them out loud. No, let's do TV shows.
TV shows.
Top five comedies, influential comedies for you in your life.
Okay, so you want to just go back and forth and just sort of like...
Yeah, let's see if they coincide. I know mine are because I've had to answer this question before. If it takes you a second to think of them. I would not know my movies.
I've got my top sitcom I always go to.
Oh, I kind of think I bet I can get yours. Let me guess yours. Okay, oh, this
go,
is
go,
even better
go,
idea.
Go.
Like, wait. What type of person were you?
I'm 5 years older than you, so keep that
in mind. Are you really?
Yeah, I'm 39.
That's crazy. Oh my God. But you have kids and you're married and everything.
No kids, but there is a marriage.
Your marriage, yeah. You got that part. I got to figure that part out. You got to figure it out.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that one of your top five favorite shows is Seinfeld.
Seinfeld. I didn't come up with the top five, but yes, of course it is. Yes,
is it?
Yes.
It's not in mine.
Really?
But I knew it would be in yours.
Okay.
See, now you're very... But the other thing is you interview people, you have a collection, so you have like intelligence behind shows. No, but at the same time, I bet you... So I don't know if this would be on the list, but someone who does what you do, this is might be on the list.
We're Larry Sanders. What are we doing?
Larry Sanders is on my list.
Of course.
100%.
Yeah.
But I thought Cheers maybe
Cheers
or no?
Cheers is number one.
See?
Cheers
I told you. Only that people who really love... It's not on mine because I haven't been able to watch all of them.
Right.
All of them. But
212 episodes of
mine is Larry. These are the ones that changed the way I looked at comedy. When I saw the UK version of The Office...
Yes, perfect.
I could not believe that... It felt like that show was made for me.
Yeah.
And only I would get it. Felt like only I would get it.
Yeah.
And then I met all these people that everybody else loved it. So Larry Sanders for me changed the way I look at television. I've been very fortunate that I'm friends with Gary and he's the best.
Yeah.
What was the other one we just said?
We did Seinfeld. It's not in your top
no,
five.
No, not Cheers.
Not Cheers.
What did we just say?
What did we say? We said the first one.
Sanders.
Oh my God.
All right, here are mine. Sanders, Freaks and Geeks.
Classic.
That shaped me kind of. Oh, UK version of The Office?
Yep.
That got me. The Simpsons, I think, is my favorite show of all time.
Yeah. Do you keep up with it? It's overwhelming. It's tough, too.
I will say, I had three goals on my bucket list. Yeah. Three of them. One of them was to be a voice on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
The other one was to host SNL. One was to be a guest on Letterman before he went away.
You knocked that out, I know.
So I just did a voice on The Simpsons.
What?
Although I wonder if I'm allowed to say
it's too late. It's happened.
Okay, I don't know when it's coming out. I wonder if I can get in trouble.
You'll be fine.
Okay. Okay.
Mac Running.
It's a very, it's a very small, I have like, you know, like four lines that's or something like that. And it's awesome.
You probably are going to get, I remember when I started here, Kurt Loder did a voice and they sent him like the cell of him in The Simpsons. And
I mean, if cells existed anymore.
That's true, I guess.
It's yeah. all like, well, I've been very lucky. I've done a lot of animated stuff. And one of the guys used to work in The Simpsons. And for my birthday, he's like, what do you want for your birthday? I was like, I don't want you to spend any money. What I want is just you to draw me with the B sharps and like singing with the B sharps. Sure. And he goes, you got it. But then he took out his cell stuff.
Yeah.
And he like painted it and it's beautiful.
Amazing.
And if I ever get a house, I'm going to hang it up. But right now it's like hanging out.
What's it's in your book bag? What else you got?
Freaks and Geeks, Larry Sanders, UK version of The Office, Simpsons.
Hee-haw?
And Hee-haw. Hee-haw seasons 4 through 20.
Step by step?
Oh my God, this is killing me. What's my fifth favorite show?
That's okay. Well, Arrested.
Oh, Arrested Development. That's it. Well done.
There you go.
How many of those? I thought you'd have three. I thought you'd have Sanders, Arrested.
I don't
Arrested.
Always have my top five like in place like you do.
But Cheers
would,
is number one.
I would put Cheers. I would definitely put Arrested. I would definitely put The Office. Those three are definitely on there. I would need to think. Seinfeld's definitely in top 10. I just need to.
Yeah, you're a Seinfeld guy. I can tell. I love Seinfeld.
I'm stereotypical that way.
I used to watch Seinfeld and Cheers when I went to sleep every night in high school.
How Jewy are you? Were you bar mitzvah? I was not bar mitzvah.
I was bar mitzvah, but I never went to shul. I got a tutor so I can get bar mitzvah.
Okay.
Because I also moved from the Bronx to Westchester.
Right.
So, like, I didn't have a real shul that we were a part of. We didn't really go every week. Did you go every week?
No.
Did you get bar mitzvah?
No.
Wow, really?
The nose and the name is all I got. It's
Your
really,
nose isn't bad? Oh, come on. Let's go to nose battle right now. I'm like one step away from Houdini. What was his name? Adrian Brody.
That was one of my favorite lines of the Emmys last
night. I thought Sandberg crushed it.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was all written by Birthday Boys and Aukerman.
Was that right?
Yeah, it was all Comedy Bang Bang guys. It was pretty great.
So you talked about the goals you had set for yourself. What are the things your parents are most proud of when they look at your resume? What got them excited?
Oh wow, I wonder what that is. I think.
Like, do they get it? Are they like tapped into like the stuff that
they are now? My dad is. My dad is very much so. My mom is just pure joy. My mom is just joy. Like she loves it. She just wants me to be happy and find somebody and all that stuff. My dad is very much understand. Like he wasn't, but he loves movies and TV. Right. Loves them. And just retired, so he has more time to do that. But I wonder what the proudest thing. I think a big one. I won an Emmy once.
Yeah.
And when I won an Emmy, I went on stage and everybody. And it was very early in my career, and it was very unwarranted. It was very weird. The timing of it is not correct.
Right.
Like I literally
should have happened 5 years later.
I was living in a tent. I was living in a tent and sleeping there or on my friend's couch. I remember sleeping in my tux that I borrowed after. Like I did. It was very weird. And I remember getting on stage and my family is like, you just won. It was crazy. Like I got 1,000. I remember being on stage and my phone was vibrating and my phone died. I guess if you get a lot of text messages, like your phone died, it shows how really I'm not popular at all. I had like 50 or 60 text messages from people and it just died. And then for the rest of the night, right. I'm like hat with an Emmy in my hand. I'm like, do you guys have like a plug? I need to like plug into my.
So that was for the Hugh and
yeah, I wrote Oscars. For the Oscars with Dan Harmon before he. I remember he was telling us how he was trying to do this pilot called Community.
Crazy.
He was with us and he was like, "What do you think about this person?" This and I knew Donald Glover and he brought up Donald Glover's name and then he's like, "Joel," he's really like Joel McHale, and then Rob Schraub, who's now directing Lego Movie 2 or the Batman one. He's directing one of them.
Okay,
and he's a genius. He's so incredible.
Yeah,
and then we wrote together. And I remember it was just very surreal. And I remember when we got nominated, they left my name off the list. And I had to be like, you guys forgot to put my name on the list. And it took like a couple weeks. And they're like, okay, you're on it now. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that would have been.
I would have lost the Emmy because of a error.
I mean, what strikes me, and you know, you're looking at the resume, it's like a very eclectic career you've got in terms of everything.
I just feel like I try to put my hands in everything and see what happens. Like, because yeah. I didn't know where I really wanted to do this really bad. And I didn't know which one was going to go. So if it was writing or like I wrote books at the beginning, like right. anything that would take.
Yeah. So does this resemble at all what you'd sketched out?
Yes, this is what I want to do. Although I wish I was, you know, I mean, of course, I want to like The Walk. Being in a movie like The Walk feels very special to me because that's like those big movies I grew up on. Some actors are like, oh, I don't want to be in like a Marvel movie. I was like, I would die to be in a movie. Are you kidding me? You know how cool that is? But there are literally actors that are like, oh, it's so the type of stories that I connected with as a kid. It is so the type of stories I'd love to keep telling. But to be able to do a show on like a Parks and Rec or like a comedy on Showtime or HBO or Netflix, like to do that for a long time, that would make me really happy. And then develop my own stuff and write my own stuff. That would make me really happy. But yeah, it's very similar to, I wish I was, I've sold a bunch of movies and that have not been made, but I'm acting the stuff I'm acting in. Yeah. I've been very lucky.
Are you still writing the thing for Seth and
Yes,
Evan?
I am. Writing that. I'm writing a movie for Universal. There's a movie, oh, I can announce this. I did a movie, a remake of Soap Dish for Paramount, and they didn't really make it then, but it got on the blacklist.
Right.
Blacklist is this thing that Franklin Leonard puts together that is like the best unproduced scripts.
Right.
And I got very lucky that I got it years ago. And then Franklin called me and he said, we're going to put yours on as a live read.
Oh, yeah. They've been doing that lately.
Yeah. And so I'm going to close off the whole season and we're going to get all these like...
Amazing.
Oh, it's going to be great. So I'm going to do it. And then the best part is, if you consider a Jewish person a minority, but if you don't, the whole stage is going to be different ethnicities. And there, I don't think there will be one white person on... I mean, me, but outside of me, there won't be one white person on stage, which I think is so cool. And it makes me very inspired and excited that I could bring that out there. But we're going after like huge... wonderful Latino actors and actresses, and Gina Rodriguez is doing it, and like so it's like Soap Dish, but it's telenovela.
Did you like the original? The first movie was a big one for me, honestly.
I liked it a lot, but I didn't remember it. I remember when they were trying to get me to write it, I was like, I don't remember enough. You should get somebody else. And I remember I suggested people that I thought would be great writers for it.
Yeah.
And they had read an old script of mine. They said, we want this type of voice in it. So I said, okay. And I watched it again. And I was like, okay, I have to do it. I loved it. It's so good. It's such a good movie.
So is there hope? Is that one of those things that just like...
I have no idea. It's such a weird feeling because you write something, you put in so much time, and then you just... at the beginning, it was way harder. Now it's just like you put it aside. I tried my best.
Yeah.
If they're going to make it, they're going to make it. If not, I remember at the beginning, the first couple that I sold, when they didn't get made, you just... It like hurts so much. Because you put in month, two, three, 4 months. And then one movie I've been rewriting for Universal for years. Because they're like, yeah, we still want to make it. I'm like, all right, if you want to keep paying me to rewrite this.
Right.
I love the movie. Like, it's my movie. I love my idea and everything. So it's a very weird thing.
And these are all, the Seth and Evan one, that's these are all solo writing assignments, right?
Yeah, everything is solo.
Yeah. Do you just find you write better
alone? I like being able to, I feel like, I'm writing one thing with one of my friends right now, a TV type thing, but... you have control of everything. You literally have control of everything. So I control when I write, I control what I think is funny. Nobody says no to me. You know what I mean? Until I'll give it to everybody and everybody says no. Right. Oh my God. The best feeling in the world is when you write a movie, you put it right in front of you and it says like, I try to make cool cover, whatever, like first page things. It looks gorgeous and you put it there and you're so proud. You create a world. Then you hand it off to somebody, and then literally you just get shit on. I mean, in every imaginable way, everything you thought was good.
To your face, or these notes you get, like
notes.
They're just that's an easy way to shit on you.
Yeah. It's a lot of notes. Yeah.
And how basic is there ever a basic note like this just isn't working? Like I don't like this, or is it always couched in like I don't feel the protagonist's journey?
Great question. A lot of it has to do with like what is like the jokes are never a problem. Yeah. It's like
it's story.
Right, what is this person? Yeah. What is this emotional? Why is this person doing this? Yeah. But there's also notes that every single person gets. I feel like there's notes that when someone doesn't know what to do, they'll just give the same note.
Right.
So I've gotten that and like sometimes barely change it. I'm like, great, you fixed it. I was like, I mean, but there are like when you work with like a Seth or an Evan, like, or Adam McKay, who I think is a genius, anything they say, I'll listen, like whatever. Yeah. And then there, and by the way, Evan will nonchalantly be like, what if this happened? And it's now the funniest part of the movie.
Right.
And it was an off the, you know, it'd be really funny, Ben, this, like what you thought of on the spot.
Right.
I'm like, yes, now that is by far the funniest part of the movie.
Right.
And then like, you know, but you'll go back and forth. Like I've written a draft and they're like, you know, never mind. Let's go back to the old. And we'll go back to the old. And with writers, it's very different. They're not as precious with their drafts. With producers, because it's way more like I'll just do a couple of drafts and then it's considered one draft.
Right.
With it's very different. But I've been very fortunate. The people I've been able to work with. I sell them as pitches. So I write them after I sell them as pitches.
I'm going off actually this afternoon to the set of Neighbors too.
Oh, yeah. Where are they?
They're in Atlanta.
Oh, you're going to fly there?
Yeah, I'm flying there tonight.
Really?
Yeah. Neighbors very exciting.
Yeah, I went to a table read of it.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I did. They get a whole bunch of people that are way smarter than me in a room.
Right.
I remember this one too, by the way.
Is this like a punch up thing or is this just like,
well, it was like a, it was like kind of like a, it was a little bit punch, but not as much jokes as just like, hey, we're going to film this movie. What does everybody think?
Got it.
But I remember Apatow was in front of me, and I barely know Apatow.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, so what does everybody think? And then Rogan's like, Schwartz, what do you think? And I'm like, Judd Apatow's right there. Let's hear his thoughts for. And I remember
he says, I agree.
Yeah, I had like a plate of like every breakfast food in front of me because I did one of the side rolls just to help them out.
Right.
And then afterwards, I was like, I'm starving. So like, I had like this huge plate of like bagels and lox. And they won't remember this, but I remember being like, oh, I loved it. I'll give you my notes later. Let's hear.
I'm missing my waffles.
And then Apatow is another one where he just like spews brilliance. And
yeah.
But that movie will be great because all those actors are hilarious. Yeah. And yeah, it'll be a good set to go on. Those are awesome dudes.
Yeah, they're great.
Tell them I say hello.
I will.
Tell them their movie. I just handed them a new draft of my movie. Hopefully they like it.
We'll read it all together.
I would love for you to read it. I would love for you to read it. I think it's going to be so good. I'm actually really excited about that movie.
And this is one that you get to also like fashion apart for yourself.
Yes.
Right? Which is,
oh my God. Can you imagine how I slowly keep making it bigger?
No, you have to. I mean, that's like,
that role is like, it was like at the beginning he's like, yeah, cause I wasn't sure which role first. And then right. McKay is like, you should do this role because you can improvise more and blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah. And then all of a sudden that role has like a love interest all of a sudden. It's like,
so what are the you're talking about like being open to being in those kind of like pop culture things, like a Zemeckis film. Do you ever get to go?
But is that pop culture? Like, what's a pop culture? Give me what's an example of a film that when you interview someone, they'll be like, yeah, they almost seem embarrassed that they're in it. I don't know what that would be.
By today's standards, it's a superhero movie.
That's crazy though, isn't it? I feel like, do you come from that world that you enjoy those?
Of course.
I mean, I had a meeting with Marvel people and I was like, these are the questions I have for you. And I like asked them a series of questions about films. But I think James Gunn crushed Guardians.
Absolutely.
I think they're, I don't know, man. I love the Avengers movies.
It's just mind boggling. Like to think like, I mean, I don't know what, if you were into that stuff growing up, but like, you know, the Wizard magazine lists of like,
course.
Who's going to play Professor X. And then it like all happened and it's all happening.
It's insane. Cool. But also think about the Wizard magazine. Didn't they have, like how much comic book costs?
Sure, yeah.
That's what I would look up all the time. Like I'd be like, oh my God, like the death of Superman. Although that was late in my comic book career. Like remember when Superman died? Yeah. I bought like four of them.
Yeah,
no, and they came in like Manila black or white envelope. I forget what they were.
I was in the worst. Like I was collecting comic books and baseball cards at a time when they suddenly mass produced them all.
Yes.
So like we were at the tail end where like we thought we were actually investing in the future when like no, there were 10 million Don Mattingly rookie cards.
Yes.
I'm not gonna make any money off of that.
I literally remember I was doing basketball, so it'd be like Jamal Ashburn rookie card, and I'd buy like a very expensive case for it, like the ones with the screws.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? Like there's some that you could put like kind of like hard plastic,
yeah,
but then there's like a glass case where you like have tiny screws. Yeah. And like I had a couple of those, like, or like X-Men cards. I don't know if you collected those Marvel cards. Those Marvel cards would be like holograms in them, and I would like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Have you gotten the app for the Star Wars trading cards on your phone?
No.
Do you know about this?
No. Are there new ones?
Well, so they're virtual cards, so I don't know what sense that makes, except that I'm totally into it. So you get an app on the phone, I can show you, and
it's like do you buy a card or buy a pack?
So
or?
You open packs and you have a certain amount of fake money and you can purchase packs and you get like these, like you get the holograms.
Can you trade with people?
You can trade.
Oh, that's really smart.
It goes all the way through The Force Awakens and all that stuff.
That's really smart. Amazing. What's the most rare? Is Yoda the rarest? Or I guess it would be like a side character?
There are so many. There are like 59 different Yodas. There's like Yoda with a lightsaber, Yoda in Empire.
I want to know what the one in 1,000 is.
I certainly don't know.
You ever do those Kid Robot dolls?
No.
Oh, don't. I got addicted to those for a little bit. I'm a huge Simpsons fan, so like I used to go to the tape reads just to listen all the time because the casting director was a big fan of Undercovers, that show of J.J. Abrams that I was on, which nobody's ever heard of. But she's like, me and my kid love that show. I was like, amazing. I knew everything about her because I was a nerd about The Simpsons, a huge nerd about Simpsons. So, I don't remember what I was saying.
So
the Simpsons. So what it is it's a box.
Yeah.
And if you open the box, it's still in a silver bag, so you can't see. You buy it with, it's just like baseball cards, with not knowing which character is in there. Yeah. And so there's like one in one, like, you know, Ned Flanders is one in 400 or whatever it is. But then like I have 35 hippie Homer Barts or hippie Homers. So it's like, I loved it. I had so much fun with it. And I have a whole collection. It's so awesome. And then like I remember I was like, oh, you have to stop. I remember thinking like, you have to stop. What are you doing?
I'm in my 30s now.
It's just like money also. Like I look at it, it's like probably $200 for like these little things, maybe more. And I'm like, oh, what are you doing?
Yeah. Is there, so do you do a voice on The Simpsons, or are you doing your own voice?
I do my own voice, and it's not me. It's like a character.
Do you tend to, in the voiceover stuff you do, mm-hmm. do you do voices? Do you tend to do your own?
I do a higher version. If my voice wasn't all messed up, I'd show you. But so I do this show called Randy Cunningham,
right.
which we just did 100 episodes for Disney.
Wow.
Crazy. 100 episodes of anything is insane. And my voice is like, everything is up here. Yeah. If my voice wasn't raspy, it feels bad. But it's like...
that
so
kid
like,
that's smoking cigarettes over
yeah, there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, I'm a ninja, so everything is very... I'm always excited and like really into being a ninja and blah, blah, blah. And my voice would get demolished. That's why I used to get sick a lot, because my throat would be like red and like sure. wah, wah, ready for sickness. Wait, can't wait for sickness. And so like you learn how to breathe better, but I'm terrible at that because I never learned how to breathe. Like, I don't know how to use my diaphragm.
Wait, and your mom teachers taught
music, yeah,
right?
But like K through five.
That's your level though.
Yeah, that is literally where. No. So that's after five is like where I stop. So like that's why I can sing like songs with people, but like I can't create music.
Have you ever gone up for musicals? Have you done musical theater? Have you ever
no?
Interested
I
at all?
Always did basketball instead of the right. musical theater.
Right.
So I did basketball, and I think there's a part of me that was too afraid to audition because I didn't want to be told that I was terrible. Same with college. I never did improv until my ex-girlfriend at the time forced me.
Right.
To do improv, she's like, "You have to audition," and I was like, oh, "Okay." And I had I've never been more nervous for anything in my life. And I auditioned, and I had a terrible audition, went home. I was like, oh my God, I blew it. And then one of her friends called and was like, he's going to get in. I don't know if I had a good audition. She's just like, he's going to get in. So it's not like, I don't know if I was whatever. But that was, I was always afraid of failing.
Yeah.
And then when I got through that first stage, it got a little easier.
What, how about auditions to this day? Do you still have that fear? Or
it matters. Like I auditioned for a big old movie, which I'll tell you about off the thing. Like a big one that would have changed my life. And I remember I'm pretty good in auditions now because I've done a lot of them. And I think there's a skill set to learn how to audition, like to be
sure,
because like as a someone like I direct some stuff every now and then, and when you see people you want to see someone that's comfortable, and you're like, oh, I'm going to spend a couple weeks with this person,
right.
So you're like, oh, I want to make sure they're comfortable and they can handle whatever. So being really nervous does not help you in those rooms, but it's so hard to say like, just don't be nervous when you go in there. So I'm pretty good. When I get my first laugh or when I get my first scene that I think I did well, I'm coasting. I'm great.
Yeah.
If it takes a little bit, or if there's a director that I really respect, or if it's a really big project, then I'll feel nervous beforehand.
Are the casting directors or the directors you meet with and those kind of things, are they generally cool or are they ever dicks?
They're almost always cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Because they don't want to. I mean, it's...
I mean, what is it? I mean, sometimes it'll be short. Sometimes it'll be like, all right, see ya. And then you're like, can I do it one more time? Like, I just spent a bunch of time memorizing this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I've been lucky. My auditions have been pretty good. But the worst thing is you could do a flawless audition.
Yeah.
And then they'll look at me and they're like, no, he can't play the role. He doesn't look like this. And that's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such a weird experience. And it's almost weirder when you lose. I can't tell which hurts more, if you lose a role because you messed up your audition or you lose a role because it's like, no, we need someone that looks different.
And have you been on the other side of it yet? I would imagine you've started. I mean, like.
I've been in the room where it's been. Yeah, where it's like, dude, that guy crushed. But he, you know, he's hilarious, but he's just not that guy. He's not this guy. So I understand it, but. You know,
and what about like kind of the chemistry read things? Have you had to do that?
Done many of those, and done them for like independent movies where I'll audition with like a love interest girl a bunch of times over, and
on both sides of it, where you've got the role or they don't have the, like, I mean, it's sort of like you're vying and the girl's vying, or
one of them I had it and we were testing women to see who would play opposite me.
Okay,
and then
is this just like speed dating where you feel like, oh, well, matters. All these girls have to pretend to be into me
it's
now.
It's very
awesome.
Weird. No, but it's like they'll bring not that many people in. They'll bring just a couple people in.
Yeah.
So you're not like whatever. But there's a movie I was going to do a while ago that I was going to that I wrote and stuff, and then halfway through it I bailed on it. But I remember meeting with these people and meeting with my friends, and then afterwards listening to what everybody says or being on the other side. Like, I remember I was helping an audition process once just because they wanted an improviser there. And I was supposed to improvise with like these are awesome big actors to see if they can handle it. And then when they leave, you hear them talk about like the biggest people. And it, by the way, you'll be amazed. Like, you know, the strongest actors.
Sure. It's just
will still not audition. Like, sometimes their auditions will just be okay.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
So you moved out to LA a few years back.
Mm-hmm. Six years ago.
6 years.
Yeah.
Have you gone totally LA? Are you?
I'm very much. I think it's very weird. I kind of LA this past year. I feel like LA has kind of been tough. I don't know why. I feel like it's been, I don't know what, I don't know how to explain it. It's been, I've been there for a while now, and I've been very fortunate what I'm doing, but then sometimes it just beats you, man. There's sometimes that city will just beat you up.
Just because it permeates.
Yeah, just not, sometimes not getting roles.
To run away from it.
Yes. Oh, the one thing, the negative for me, well, it's a positive in some, especially when I first moved there, it's positive, but, excuse me, the negative that for me is everybody does the same thing.
Yeah.
When I lived here, like, you can meet an architect or a construction worker and, like, have real conversation or be on the subway and talk to people.
You bump into people.
Yes. Just, yeah. And different types of people. Metro North, because my family lives in Westchester. I'd be in Metro North twice a week to see them or one, you know, and would chat with, you know, a psychologist or a blank. And in LA, it's a lot of the same. And if they're doing something else, it's a means to make money to so they can do this.
Yeah.
Which I understand. If you're in Detroit, you're going to work in those warehouses or, you know what I mean, or the factories, rather, and where our version of the auto industry is entertainment. So if you want to do it, you end up there. But it, as a human being, like, trying to connect with other human beings, sometimes it can get a little bit, it could get a little bit tiring meeting everybody does the same exact thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the best, what's the best work you've done you think nobody's ever seen?
Oh, wow. The best work I've done. Okay. I'm not, it's very hard for someone to say when they were good at something.
Well, or just even the product, because you know, you've done projects of all size, some huge that were intended for big audiences, a lot of indies that, you know, at their best are only going to be seen by.
That's true. I think, you know what I really like? There's a scene in House of Lies this year that I don't think a ton of people watch that show. Although we get renewed, so maybe they do.
Yeah, you're in your, like, fourth or fifth, right?
This is our fifth season.
That's crazy.
But there's a scene where, this will be a huge spoiler, but maybe you guys can find it. There's a scene where my dad comes back, and he's a terrible person and abandoned our family and is terrible. And then he tells me he has cancer, so I have to take care of him. So I put him up, I take care of him, and then I find out that he's faking it the whole time. And so I had this speech that David Walpert, an amazing writer, wrote, and I figure it out at a breakfast between him and I, and I figure out that he's lying to me. And then I switch, and I do this monologue that's a page and a half or 2 pages that's like me talking about all the terrible things he's done and whatever. And I do it to him, and it hurts him so much that he has a heart attack and he dies. Like, and it's this huge thing. And I love it. And nobody's ever, I love that it happened. And it was such a beautiful moment. And like, you know, like also like when they submit for Emmys and stuff like that, they do scenes. And I don't even think they did. You know what I mean? Like, cause it's so dramatic. It's for comedy, but it's like, I love that.
I mean, do you take pride in that in a way, because that's not, at least at this point, what's expected of you, and it's
you're like, exactly correct. That's because it's like, also for me, that's a real challenge.
Yeah.
Like, John Ralphio is one of my favorite things in the universe to do. I thought the character was incredible. Yeah. Like, to play, it was so fun. But it's like when they show me a script, I could play. It's also, by the way, talking about memorizing stuff. I could memorize John Ralphio lines in a second.
Right.
Or I can memorize any real comedic beat in a second, but I had to take time to memorize that I'm going to kill my father speech.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, really put in like a day's work and stuff like that. You're right. So those things, but like, you know, there's a bunch of park stuff that I'm super, I mean, like, really proud of. Yeah. There's a short film called I'm a Mitzvah that's like, I went to Sundance and it's just me, and it's about like my friend dies in Mexico and I have to pick up his dead body and bring it back home, and it's me dealing with the death, and Ben Berman directed it, and that's pretty special too. I think it's a special one too.
So coming full circle on the walk. So when you finally, like, you work for a bit and you get to
know, very good with time management. You know exactly how much time you have left.
Well, you know, I know you have to do silly Snapchat things for MTV.
Yeah, but it's for Sammy Heller. We can do it whenever. She's open to whenever. Can I ask you questions?
Yeah. What do you
mean? All right. Let me. You ask your last one.
I was going to say.
Unless this is going to wrap it up so perfectly
should. Oh, okay. God, no way.
So you're terrible at your job.
Yeah. Not. I'm not good. But
back to the future.
No. Back to the future is Zemeckis. So what did you, when you worked with the Courage, what did you want to know from him? What did you ask him?
So I waited. By the way, you want to hear a great story?
Yes, I do.
So my role is very small, right? And I still said I'll audition for it. Like, it's like, I mean, I have so few lines in it. I'm in a couple scenes, but I have so few lines in it. But I'm an integral part of making the heist, the quote-unquote, him, like, I'm there. In real life, like, this guy existed and he helped him out.
Right.
But I was like, yeah, I'll audition. Of course, I'll audition, even if it's tiny, whatever. And I did the audition for a casting director, not even for him.
Right.
And they're like, he really liked it. He wants to see you. Oh, there's a great story, but it's too long. But he's like, he wants to see you. I was like, great. Is he going to be in the room? He's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm going to meet my hero.
Yeah.
The other thing is, the audition is so small that there's like not a lot of room to like show him, like, this is why you should hire me.
Right.
And then I did it, and he let me improvise a little bit because they're, you know, whatever. And then he goes to, I think it was Victoria Burrows, who was the Catherine. He goes, is it okay? Do you mind for a second if just Ben and I talk? And she goes, of course. She was used to it, obviously. Obviously, when he, I guess maybe
this is a good song.
This is a part of the process, yes. I think. And then she leaves, and I'm like, oh, I was like, oh my God, Robert Zemeckis. And he sits, and he sits, and he changes his chair to right in front of me, and we sit right in front of me, and I'm like, I cannot tell you the joy I felt, even if I wasn't going to get it. And he's like, hey, I just like to talk to my actors a little bit. If, you know, he didn't know if he was going to hire me or not, although I made so many jokes about, like, so I got the role, huh? And he's like, no, you know, like, there's so many people that have to say yes outside of him. But, like, I kept, he's very funny, by the way. If you get him in the right direction, he's very, he knows exactly what's funny.
You have to be the man that made use Cars and Death Becomes Her. I mean,
see, it's very, very true.
Yeah.
It's, but it's like his comedy. And by the way, he loves to laugh. But, you know, like, he's very, he does his own thing. And he's so inspired all the time that you almost don't want to get in his way and say something stupid. But whatever. But I love to make him laugh. It was one of my favorite things. Even talking to him on the phone. Like, I after the movie, I was like, hey, I saw the movie. And, like, I love to make him laugh. But he sat down and he's like, I just want to talk. And we just talked about stuff. It wasn't even about the movie. It was like, he's like, so what do you do? Like, what else do you do? And I told him I wrote, and we talked about writing for a while because, you know, obviously he's a writer. Sure. And like, and it was so inspiring. And I've never had an experience like that with after an audition. Like, sometimes you know, like, oh, I have a chance.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I have a chance with this one. And so even if I didn't get it, just the idea that he sat and he took the time, because I'm sure he did it with
a real
people.
Experience with him as opposed to,
oh, how exciting. It was so exciting. And then when the first question I asked him, Back to the Future stuff, and I was like, did you know when you're making it, like, that it was going to be the biggest, like, or that it was going to be such a seminal movie? And he's like, no, we lost our lead actor a month
after I fired Eric Stoltz. Oh my
God. He was like, no, we were always we replaced our lead actor. I loved asking him. And I remember there was one thing I was like, God, I remember watching it. We just watched it again. Like, when we were there in Montreal.
Right.
I was like, I never noticed that it says Twin Peaks. And then when he knocks over that tree at the end, it says Lone Peaker,
exactly.
Right? And he's like, Ben, you didn't realize that? And I was like, okay, all right, Zemeckis. But I could ask him questions about everything. And then what I did is I bothered his producer because I didn't want to bother him. So I asked his producer so many nerdy questions about Roger Rabbit and Castaway. The one cool thing that I learned, which is kind of my neat little thing, is what was the movie with Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer?
Oh, that's a good one. What Lies Beneath?
Yes. So he shot the first half of Castaway when Tom Hanks was heavier.
Yes.
And then used the same exact crew.
Yep.
So everybody in that movie went to What Lies Beneath.
Yep.
And then went back to Castaway.
Totally.
So they never stopped. They must have filmed for, I mean, that must have been
18 months or something.
Oh my God. Nonstop.
By the way, What Lies Beneath, written by Clark Gregg. Fun fact.
Really?
Yeah.
Clark Gregg from the Marvel franchise?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was a writer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He also has directed a couple indies too.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What a great movie that was also. A thriller by Clark Gregg.
I know.
Where does that come from?
That's as close to a great Hitchcock movie as we've had in the last 20 years.
Great movie.
Right?
You see Ex Machina?
Yeah, really.
Loved it. Loved it.
What? Okay, so New York Film Festival.
New York Film Festival.
This is going to be big.
Yeah, it'll be really fun.
You're going to be there, I assume, opening night.
I'll be there. I'm going to get interviewed by you. I told Badge that I have a friend that's going to interview us and that I think I want to... The problem is this. I really want to screw with you.
Oh, God.
Like, really, really bad. But the problem is, like, it gets filmed and then we're supposed to be representing our movie. And, like, yours is on a platform also that actually you'll interview a lot of people, but yours, you might release it.
Exactly.
So if I literally tackle you to the ground and tickle you for for 10 minutes, I told Badge, I was like, there's one guy that I know that's coming in. I'm doing it with James Badge Dale. Like, we're both doing it.
Amazing.
And so together, which is great. So you don't have to be there by yourself all the time. But I was like, there's one guy that we may have to fuck with the whole time.
Now
and
he I goes, to really? Be on the defensive.
Well, no, now I'm screwed because I also realize that I can't, like, I have to be.
Yeah, you want
to
work with Zemeckis again.
Yeah.
The tickle.
And also TriStar and Sony. Yeah. Although maybe that's the reason why people will watch it. Well, listen. No, if anybody listens to this, thank you for listening to this, first of all. It's kind for you to care. But the other thing is, if there's video footage of me and Josh doing a press for The Walk, know that if I'm not tickling him, I'm thinking about tickling him.
As he's giving his canned response, he's actually thinking about time. My
God, I hope that camera's rolling from the second you get in.
Jesus Christ.
To the second.
Suddenly I have a doctor's appointment. It's good to see you, Ben.
Great to see you. Can I ask you two questions?
Yes, go for it.
What's our runtime? 40 minutes?
We're on the longer end, which is great. We're about 50.
What's the longest one you've ever done?
I think I did about an hour with Jesse Eisenberg. It's a Jew thing, clearly.
Yeah, it could be. What's Jesse Eisenberg like?
He's fascinating. He's actually like you in that he comes in with as many questions as
answers. Yeah, I love asking questions.
He is like, I don't know if it's a deflection technique. Not for you. I don't think it is for you.
It is kind of as well. I don't love talking about myself. Yeah.
But for him, he just doesn't like.
I'm genuinely interested in things.
Yeah, I don't get that.
Really?
No, of course. I mean, I would have to have that hopefully for this job.
These are the two questions I would ask you. One, what's the weirdest thing that's ever happened during an interview? If you had to tell the truth.
God. Okay.
Are you allowed to talk about that or no?
No, I just, I'm bad at it. Okay.
Of course you would remember. I remember from weird interviews that I've done. I've done like 10.
Well, but here's the thing. My stuff is, a lot of it's purposefully weird. Like I put myself in bizarre situations.
Oh yeah, I saw you ask something crazy once and you were so nervous before asking. I forgot what it was.
Well, I do like a series literally called Up Close where like they're on my lap and like,
oh, is that true?
Yeah, totally. Like it's
really
bizarre,
funny
things
idea.
Like that. And no, the things that stick out of my mind are the small things like you know, my stomach making a noise while interviewing Vera Farmiga and like her.
Oh, she's both, so gorgeous.
She's so gorgeous, and both of us just like knowing it happened but not acknowledging it.
Did you ever fart during an interview?
I don't think I have.
Has anybody ever farted during an interview?
I'm sure. The law of averages say there have been at least 10 farts over the years.
You don't remember one? Oh, how about this? Is there ever a question you asked that you wish you never asked?
I asked, well, sometimes in film festivals, especially when like I'm fried, the questions get really shitty.
Yeah. Dude, imagine like when we get 1,000.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Same on your end. And sometimes like,
you never want to be the last couple. Although you might want to.
Sometimes it's punchy. It's fun.
Oh, yeah. I bet if I saw you near the end, that would be the best interview of all time. You get me saying things I would never say to anybody else.
Exactly. Yeah, and sometimes I've like, on rare occasions, and I take pride in actually knowing my shit, unlike the other 99% of horrible entertainment
right
out there. But like, I remember interviewing like Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell for a movie like that I saw like 6 months earlier. It was in Bruges.
Yeah, it was.
In Bruges, right. And I think I incorrectly remember that they were brothers in it. And like, you guys play brothers in this. And they're like, no, we don't mate. And I'm like, no, metaphorical brothers. Here am I trying to cover? And it's just like.
And do they call you out or no?
Oh, totally. Ugh. Yeah, that's never good.
I feel like there's something worse you can't talk about.
You think?
And what was the best? What's the best interview you've ever done?
Oh my God, the best?
Yeah.
I
bet it's earlier on in your career because that's when it's more exciting.
I think that the best stuff that I always think about, it's honestly doing fun stuff and making the people I respect laugh.
Yeah.
So it's like,
that's interesting.
It's like doing a sketch with like Will Ferrell and like to hear like that man, like that laugh.
He's the best. He's the fucking best.
My favorite like random small Will interaction I ever had was I was at some like random awards show thing, just like I was going for fun, and I saw Will coming out of the bathroom, and he saw me, and he just pumps his arm, and he goes, "Nailed it!" as he's walking out of the bathroom. And it's like he's always got something. Genius.
Oh, coming out of the bath.
Yeah. He's the sweetest.
He is so funny.
He's the funniest man on the planet.
Although in real life, though, he doesn't he's
not big. He's
he can turn it on in an instant.
We did a sketch, him, me, and Wahlberg once called The Knife Show.
For the other guys. I was in that movie for one scene.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was epic. It was early on in my career at MTV where I didn't realize that when you do a show called The Knife Show, you should probably use props instead of real knives.
No, you did not.
We had real knives, and it's actually on my business card. I'll show you. It's a photo of Mark Wahlberg sticking a knife like in my eye. Yeah, it happened.
He loves you. I've seen many things with you and Wahlberg.
He's the best.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is that we share. Here it is. Look at that. That happened. That's really smudged, but that's a look of fear. That's actual fear.
Oh my God, I would literally cry. I would cry.
Well, anyway, Ben.
What?
Did we do it?
A pleasure. I think we nailed it.
I think you did.
I attended
the podcast.
No, I just hung out for a bit.
This was destined to happen. I'm glad we finally made it work.
Yeah, I feel like it'll happen many times. Can you ask one weird question? End it with one real weird one.
What?
Doesn't have to be good.
How much did you make on the walk?
Oh, very little. I mean, well, comparatively, I told them I'd do it for anything. Very little comparatively to what I'm sure
right.
Big time movie star. By the way, movies, anytime you see me in a movie, I'm making less money than everybody else because I'm so quick to say I'll do whatever. But by the way, I'm also
that's a resume builder. That's the one.
Yeah, and also it's dreams. I want to do that movie. And by the way, still, it's more money than I ever made when I was in New York. I had no money in New York. No money in New York.
It's all relative.
It's such a funny thing because I'll come back here now and they pay for your airfare and they put you up in a hotel. But because when I lived in Manhattan for 5 years doing comedy, I had no money. So I don't, people are like, yeah, like you go out with people who, like, where should we eat tonight? And I don't know any places to eat.
Chipotle again?
Literally. It would be like Chipotle, Wendy. I ate a lot of fast food when I was here.
Right.
A lot of Chinese food, a lot of like Korean, like I lived in Koreatown. But it's so funny when you come here and have more than no money.
Right.
Like, it's so interesting.
Well, now you're pulling it down to Disney VO money, so you're okay.
There's no money.
Where's the money coming from, Ben?
God, TV, honestly, TV's all right. It's mostly this stuff. Podcasts. Like, Josh pays
well. Yeah, you were misinformed. On to the next one. Next time we'll do something silly.
A pleasure. Anytime you want. We're supposed to do a sketch. Maybe we'll do a sketch soon.
I'd love to.
I would love to do that. It'd be really fun.
Thanks for stopping by.
I love you very much.
Calm down.
Can you say it to me?
Let's not overstate.
I love you very much. Say it. I love you very much. Josh, I love you.
I'm supposed to say, Josh, I love you?
No, look me in the eyes. I want you to look me in the eyes and tell me you love me. Josh, I love you.
Why do you? Oh, I see. You're saying Josh.
I want you to say you love me.
I just understand because I keep thinking I'm supposed to say Josh, I love you.
You're making this to Woody Allen. Okay. I want you to express to me the affection you have to me as real as you can. Okay? I'm going to film it. And then I'm going to text it to you.
Oh, God almighty. Why are you adding layers to this? Why can't it just be one thing?
Ready?
Don't Periscope it.
No, I don't even know. I can't do Periscope. It's all too much. Everything is too much. I don't even know how to wake up in the morning anymore. Ready?
Not really, but let's do it.
Okay, ready? Josh, I love you.
Ben?
Yeah.
I love you. Thanks for stopping by. That felt real.
It's great.
Should I hit stop? Are we ready? Are we going to replay it?
You want to replay it? You want instant gratification? All right, we'll replay it. Ready?
Josh, I love you.
Ben?
Yeah.
I love you.
Now you can stop it.
Hello, I'm Emily Foster.
And I'm Deanna Raphael, and we are the hosts of OMFG, the podcast that helps you get hip to what the youths are up to.
And helps you get chill AF. Am I using that right?
We're V-chill, Emily. You know, but right now we are actually here for a very eye-opening episode we just released. Very exciting.
Lizzie Velasquez was born with an inability to gain weight. After being labeled the ugliest woman in the world on YouTube, she did a TED Talk on the epidemic of online bullying.
Now she's fighting for Congress to pass an anti-bullying bill, and starting this week, you can see her incredible documentary, A Brave Heart. We are obsessed with her, we talked to her, and here's a little piece of what she had to say.
Every time I see a bad comment or someone says something, it doesn't really, I mean, there are times it will upset me. I mean, I'm human. But at the same time, there are times where I see it and I think I really do still have a job to do. There are still people that are needing help or needing to see that there is a different outlet for your anger.
To hear more, listen to Lizzie Velasquez, A Brave Heart on OMFG.
And keep listening to OMFG on Wolfpop for more interviews with some amazing young people. You can listen on iTunes, Howl, or your favorite podcasting app.
Pop.
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 Pop. Pop.
This has been a Wolfpop production. Executive produced by Paul Scheer, Adam Sachs, Chris Bannon, and Matt Gourley. For more information and content, visit wolfpop.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast. Now, with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.